This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu. It's Tech Talk, and Karmjit Singh from Digital News Asia joins us today. It's the first Thursday of November. So, you know, we'll get straight into things. Of course, we talk about the ecosystem of the tech world across the region now. So we'll talk about how nations can capture opportunity in the digital economy. And you spoke to someone from Accenture Global.
Correct, yes.
An Italian who makes terrible pizza, I understand.
Correct. So, I mean, my colleague, Jin Jiong, is here in the studio for the first time. Mm. He's not going to be talking, just going to be listening in, and he's okay. Already received a mouthful or earful from Frida about what not to do.
What not to do, yes, like that.
But so, it was interesting for us because Gianfranco Cassati is with Accenture Global, and he's the head of growth markets Accenture. So he's got great visibility of how growth markets around the world are doing. And with Malaysia just having put an emphasis on the digital economy with the budget, they say, hey, let's have a conversation. So obviously my first question to him was, which I thought was quite interesting, not because it was my question, but hey, you have visibility of countries, emerging countries, right? Not emerging, they use specifically growth, okay? Growth markets around the world, and they're all trying to transition and adapt and capture value in the digital economy, right? That's where all the action is. Can you tell us which one country has done a better job than the rest so that, you know, it's a benchmark? And, you know, he couldn't come up with any country at all. He said no one country has had a handle on it. And he even mentioned, because he lives in Singapore, he said even Singapore hasn't had a handle on it. So, but then when you look at Malaysia, so as I was hearing him talk, it just struck me that what Malaysia is doing is really puts us at the edge, you know. At the forefront of a nation trying to adapt to digital, because you know digital economy has come out in the budget speech, but here those people who've been reading DNA and who've been listening to us will know that we've been using the word digital Malaysia, digital economy for eons, right? And the phrase digital Malaysia was coined in 2011, I think, in September in New York, when there was a meeting with global, you know, technology innovation leaders and with the government there also. And they say, hey, we're going to create this concept called Digital Malaysia. And then we started conceptualizing the plans the following year. I think in May or June, if you go to DNA and you search for Aswan's name and Digital Malaysia, you'll see an article where we said, finally, some of the plans for Digital Malaysia have been unveiled. 2012, and we've been reporting about that, you know, ongoing since. So it's not new, which is good for Malaysian citizens, because we've already gotten it that digital is important. We're moving forward, have moved forward a lot. And one key initiative is education. Remember, we spoke about how computational thinking is now embedded in the curriculum of our national school system, and it'll be rolled out in January next year in phases, right? I think next year you'll start with children from maybe standard 1, standard 2, standard 3, and then the following year it moves higher, so that entire, you know, standard 1 to form 5, you'll have computational thinking in your national school education. And Cassetti mentioned that as one of the three things that countries must do to give themselves and their companies a chance to be winners in this digital economy. He said, you must get education right. Because now education, you got, and especially the millennials who are now in school, right? You have to prepare them to be out in a workforce, in a work environment that he says didn't exist 10 years ago. 10 years is, all of us can remember 10 years ago, right? As recent as that, he said the work environment today doesn't, is not the same as what was 10 years ago. So your kids are coming out, your talent pool must be ready to compete and play a role in this new ecosystem we're in. So education, he said, is very important. And we actually recorded a video clip of him further distilling what that means. So you can read the article and taking your advice, Frida, and watch the video of what he says about that. Then he also talks about infrastructure. And he said, hey, your government was just in China and a whole bunch of, you know, deals were signed. And of course, there's a nice WhatsApp going on about, you know, giving everything away to China. So what's interesting is they said, look, that's a lot of it is physical infrastructure, but don't neglect digital infrastructure, right? Mm. Critical. And of course, in the budget, it was also announced that one key component of digital infrastructure, broadband costs, you know, are going to come down and speeds are going to double. So that's exciting. So we already have that going. And then he said the third one, which was I thought was kind of interesting, was financial markets. He said you need strength in financial markets. And I kind of disagreed with him. And I posted him a follow-up question in the video you can watch. I said, can you imagine a country like Myanmar? How long do they have to wait before their financial markets are mature enough to be able to support the entrepreneurs in their country, right, with funding or with grants or with, you know, with angel investment? And then he had his answer to that, and you can listen in the video. But and he said the Silicon Valley hasn't been so successful because their people are smarter than anyone else. It just attracts, you know, the best or the most crazy entrepreneurs or wannabe entrepreneurs from around to go there, because they said when they're there, they're in an environment where their ideas can get funded, because you need funding, right, to give you an idea, to give you a chance to execute what you want. So he said these three components need to be in place, and I think if you look at where Malaysia is, a lot of those components are in place and are being strengthened. Yeah, and I always say that look, all a lot of funding funds are available in Singapore. Singapore is like, you know, and Malaysia, no difference. Yeah, it doesn't take much to go there and raise money from anyone. So in fact, we are soon going to break a story about an entrepreneur who's raised a significant amount of funding in US dollars, and he got the funding from investors in Singapore.
But you digress.
I digress. No, yeah. But the importance of funding, yeah. So anyway, so these are the three things he talks about, and he talks about the entrepreneurial nature of a country, and the fact that Malaysia has got 98%, 97% of its businesses being SMEs shows that we have the entrepreneurial flair.
Okay, so this is Gianfranco.
Gianfranco.
So if you want to listen to the Italian accent, you got to go inside and watch the video.
Yeah, and he makes terrible pizza, I admit it. But we were merciful and we didn't put that on video.
So with the next story, just looking at the headline, does this mean there'll be more opportunity for startups to get funding from a pool of angel investors beyond their national borders, right? This is what the Malaysian Business Angel Network, MBAN, along with angel investment groups in seven ASEAN countries, announced on November 1st their strategic alliance to form the ASEAN Angel Alliance, AAA. Sounds good.
Sounds good, yeah. It's a big ask, A-S-K. Sometimes I don't pronounce it properly. So anyway, you've got the article will tell you about the participants from the various angel groups. And this is really credit to MBAN and the leadership of Dr. Siva Palan Vivekaraja, who's also a Digirati 50. And I'm very biased here because Dr. Siva is also my advisor last 4 years. You know, so I don't know whether I've taken his advice, but he's been my advisor and DNA's advisor. So anyway, so they've now created this alliance. And, you know, it's a joint effort, right? And the aim is to focus on ASEAN's angel investment landscape. And Dr. Siva says that you also hope that the angel network countries will work together and contribute in whatever way they can to a common objective.
You know what I'd like to see in this, though,
what?
Personally?
Okay.
You know, a focus on women business.
I think you if you highlight that, then you're saying that that's an area of weakness and it has to be a special spot.
It is, because it is an area of weakness, right?
I think and entrepreneurs will... if I was an investor, I wouldn't care if it's a woman or not, right?
No, it's not that, but it's just that they're less... It's just been statistically shown that, you know, women, if they're women on the board, they will actually invest in more women-run businesses. So it's just one of those things. It'd be interesting to have that. Just that focus there.
Maybe, you know, there is one one of the participants there is from, I think, the Philippines, and she's running their, you know, like angel network, Nicole Paterno.
Just look at the spread, right? It's very male-centric. Anyway,
yeah, of course. Right? I mean, the whole tech ecosystem, right, is male-centric. Yeah.
Anyway, that's not your part of your story.
No, but it's fair. So they're just trying to get, you know, because according to Dr. Siva, cross-border investment is challenging in ASEAN because of, you know, diverse markets, cultural language. And he says that this alliance is the only way they think people can get to know people in other countries better. And angels, and then partner with angels who already know the country, you know, in that particular country better. I think if you strip it all out as an entrepreneur out there looking, you say, hey, does this now allow me to maybe widen my pool of potential angel investors? I think not yet, but it will lead to that. Now that you've got this alliance, now if they start collaborating and visiting each other more, you may see an angel investor here saying, you know, I like this idea. You know, do you want to co-invest? Because the entrepreneur says that he wants to hit Philippines as his second market next. You want to come in at this, you know, very, very early stage with me? So there is the chance. This alliance allows for those kind of conversations to start happening. Right, and they've never happened before, and that may lead to, you know, investments. And, you know, with the crowdfunding platforms also, we've got equity crowdfunding, And then as those entrepreneurs, angels come here, they realize, oh, you can, they can actually invest in Malaysian companies, so via this economic equity crowdfunding platform too.
Okay. Now let's talk about the accidental entrepreneur. Who is Jailani Mustafa? What does he do?
Yeah. So he was a former consultant with, interesting enough, Accenture. 15 years with the menus. And the last, and 10 years before he launched his company, he's actually based overseas, mainly out of Singapore and Indonesia. I don't consider Singapore overseas, right? These two countries, but traveling around the region, right? And helping clients. And then he finally decided to take a break and then wanted to do something more interesting. And he realized that he really loved what he did at Accenture, which was managing projects and helping people to run their businesses more efficiently. So he set up an organization called ECO, which is, and it's around project management software, okay, to help people just run their projects better. And he says that anyone who's run a project knows that how stressful it is, you know, with sleepless nights and all. And he says that his tool helps them, you know, to keep everything under control. And as a result of that, then you have time for family too. Because when work consumes you, what suffers is family life, yeah, right? He says he wants to be able to give people back a portion of their family life. So very interesting social element to his desire to create a business tool, right, that helps companies. Mm. And I thought it was quite interesting. I think he has felt that before. His family has suffered, right?
Mm. As family, working, health, yeah, you know, all these things sometimes we'll take that for granted.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
all right. And so he was, and he was also part of the CGP, which is funded by Creda, which is the Coach and Guru program. And he said he benefited from that because they helped him change his business model a bit and made him see the wider picture. And I constantly hear entrepreneurs who've been in part of the CGP say that when they've gone in, because, you know, people come in with a fresh pair of eyes, unbiased, no favoritisms, right? No emotional attachment to any one product or department or whatever. And they bring a very level-headed, a piece of advice to them. And because they're credible, you listen to them, and it seems to have made a difference. I've not hit my secret that I think the CGP program, Coach and Grow, is probably the best C-level intervention, you know, program in Southeast Asia. Fantastic. Okay. So this is just another testament to it. And just to credit Jailani, right? Look, he was ranked, his company is ranked number 52 in Deloitte Technology Fast 500. In 2015, number 52, not bad. Out of the 500 fastest growing Asia-Pacific companies,
wow.
They ranked him number 52, and before that he was ranked second in a Deloitte Technology Fast 50. So he had the Deloitte Technology Fast 500 and Fast 50. So it's an interesting company. I think he probably may be looking for some investment to take him just to the next level.
It's a bit under the radar at the moment.
They are. So a lot of times you hunker down and you want to deliver value to your company. Yeah. And he says the growth of his company is not restricted by lack of customers. It's restricted by his ability to find the right talent pool to help him deliver.
There's that thing again.
Yeah, exactly. Even Kasati said, even with Accenture, because he was here, because they launched their global delivery center, a new one in Pavilion Tower yesterday. They've got about 300. Actually, it was launched a few months ago. They just had the official launch yesterday. 300 over people. He said the growth of that center is not going to be constrained by no customers, no business. It's going to be constrained by the number of people they're able to hire who can deliver the work that customers want. Very interesting.
Okay. We're going to talk about Singapore.
Yeah.
And some of the activities there after this. Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. You're listening to Tech Talk, BFM 89.9.
Best Future Marketeers, BFM 89.9.
It's Tech Talk. Good afternoon, Frida Liu here. Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. We're doing a round of some of the interesting stories around the region. We're moving to Singapore, where an acquisition by Lazada has caught your attention.
Yes.
Pray tell why, Karam.
Okay, we'll start with it, then we'll go to Digirati. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do this and then we'll talk about your Digirati thingy.
I think because we had a press release out yesterday that showed that Lazada, which of course now is majority owned by Alibaba, and with the option to take a larger, you know, equity if they hit certain milestones. They have now acquired Redmart, which is a shopping, you know, e-grocer, to put it, e-grocer in Singapore. But what I found interesting is that Lazada is a regional Southeast Asian-based e-commerce site, and you're buying a company in one country and the second smallest country outside of Brunei in Southeast Asia, and just doing groceries, you know. And they have, of course, they didn't announce how much it is, And then they talk about, and they use Goldman Sachs. You know, Lazada used Goldman Sachs. And then Redmart used Credit Suisse. So it's a deal between two startups. Why do you want to bring in two very expensive, you know, advisors to help you, you know, cut the deal, which I found quite strange. And the other thing I found strange is Lazada said that the acquisition will help them benefit from Redmart's strong fulfillment capabilities. But, you know, in Singapore, why do you want to spend, you know, whatever that is to acquire fulfillment capability in Singapore? Because Singapore is small, right? I think they haven't heard of Ninja Van. You can use guys like Ninja Van or whoever, right? And you can get that last mile fulfillment very easily. So this is just one of those deals that they're just, you know, having covered the ecosystem for eons, right? It just strikes me as being very strange, especially the fact that you've got these two high-end, you know, financial advisors, you know, involved in the deal.
Okay.
So I've put some feelers out to some VCs to say what's really going on here. But
what's
just,
the real
yeah,
story?
What's the real story here, you know? So okay. It doesn't really add real significant value to Lazada, I believe.
So before we move to Indonesia, you want to talk about Digirati. Talk lah.
Yeah, talk lah. Oh man, so generous. So no, this is because we feature our Digirati 50 yes. every week on DNA. And this week we happen to feature Jeff Ong, who is one of the Digirati, and you know he runs FlexiRoam. And I think what I like is that he is an engineer, a telco engineer before, and you know all of us have experienced bill shock. And you know he said that and he founded FlexiRoam to end mobile roaming. Can you imagine that statement? He wants to end mobile roaming.
Okay.
And very interesting entrepreneur, you know, engineer before, comes out and does this, and his company now is listed on the ASX, Australian, you know, Securities Exchange, and doing quite decently, you know. And then, of course, people, you know, when they were about to list 2 years ago, people said, you know, with mobile data rates coming down, you've got various roaming alliances now, you've got apps you can use, you've got WhatsApp, right? You know, I think people, bill shock may be something that's going to be history. But I think the fact that enough consumers still see value in his product, they're out there, you know.
And I remember interviewing him in his early days. Yeah, in his early days. And it's nice to see that they've grown in that sense.
Yeah. No, and I like what he said. You know, it's crazy, but you know, if you manage to get like-minded people who buy into your vision, you can do extraordinary things. And again, it's about the people, right? Just get the right kind of people. And you know, he's also thankful to his wife, right? Because he said there were many times when he wanted to give up, but she kept me going. And she's truly, you know, the greatest partner I have in this venture. And it's really nice for entrepreneurs to acknowledge that.
Yeah, that lest we forget, you know, where you are, where that came from, where the support came from. Right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, we're going to move to Indonesia, where you want to highlight how Axiata's Indonesian company, XL, what they did.
Yeah, so I wanted to just talk about their revenues, you know, for the quarter, because it's a company owned by Axiata here, right? So XL, Axiata is the company in Indonesia. So they announced a year-on-year, you know, a net profit of 12.5 million, right? Ending September 30th, and then the previous corresponding period, they actually posted a loss of almost 40 million US. So now they've got a profit of 12 million US. Now, you know, you look at the numbers, hey, what? US quarter, you know, US 38 million, US 12 million, such a small number, right? Telcos here announce in the billions each quarter. But, you know, Indonesia is a growth market. They are now still the third largest telco in the country, but they're trying to transition and compete and move up the value chain. And they're doing something interesting also. They're trying to do what Maxis has done here and just have a better quality mix of customers. And and they also sold their tower business because they had some gains from there, and they had some Forex gains also. But the analysts looking at it said that what they've done with disposing of their tower business and, you know, just doing a right sale, I think it positions them well for the coming quarters to see higher growth. And that's, you know, because Khazanah has a stake in them too, so Malaysian taxpayers are involved. And it's just a nice article to read. It gives you a sense of Indonesia, the market, and how even data, right, is going to be big there, because it says that XL wants to lead in the mobile internet era. That means 4G and just improving on your towers, right, your service.
And your last story is on Gulf Reserve, right? And I think we interviewed them recently as well.
Recently, yeah. Okay. Oh, okay.
Two young boys or something.
Yeah.
Like
well,
that.
Not so young now. Like when I met Pratip Surya, yeah, he was young, but he persisted. He kept with this. And what I like about this story is now they've raised, you know, some money, and they've got in investments from Toon Labs, right? And they're also a recipient of Cradle CIP 500, you know, which offers successful grant recipients 500,000 ringgit, which is $119,000. And Pratip now says that he's now just taking this to other countries. They first, of course, launched in Malaysia. The name was interesting. At the time that they launched, they actually called it, I think the word bogey was there. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to look up the name in the article. And he said that they, and then the golfers, you know, didn't like the name. And even golf clubs, golf courses didn't like the name because they said, hey, you know, it was called golf bogey. Very straightforward. And hey, nobody likes the word bogey. And so he actually got advice from like Tony Fernandez. He got from Kylie. And even he mentioned industry veterans like Dr. Sivapal. And again, his name mentioned. But that's Pratip mentioning him. And so just changed the name. They wanted golf bogey because they thought it would be catchier. It is catchy, right? Mm. But if the name has negative
connotations
in the market
you
you're serving.
Because you don't want to get a bogey.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. So people don't want to jinx themselves, right? Yeah. It's tough enough playing golf without any jinx
for
on
the
you.
Jinxes.
Correct. And you know, today they serve more than 1,000 golfers on a monthly basis. And and with smartphone penetration, you know, in Malaysia, over 50%. And they're only available now in 74 golf courses. So they think that's, I think they said there's like 200 over golf courses in the country. So a lot of upside. And, you know, when you earlier you mentioned the word branding, now that, and you said that earlier nobody knew them. Now that you've got a corporate name like Tune Labs, you know, Tune Group behind you, it'll be easier to get in and gain traction. And I like this because he has really he has had a tough time, make no mistake about it. And he's just stayed the course and fought the good fight and displayed grit and crazy. Stayed the course. Oh, there you go. Hey, I like that. Man. That was deliberate, yes. No, la, that was
he's so clever, la, Kara.
Yalla. And I don't even know it. No, he stayed the course. Let me just repeat that because some of your listeners may not have caught it. Anyway, and look at what is happening now. He's now given himself a chance to get into three other countries and and let's see how it goes. And of course, he's honest. He says, look, the company's not profitable yet, but they're forecasting profitably by the third quarter of next year. So a year from now, he thinks they will be profitable. And let's go. Interesting data points about, you know, how many percent bookings have increased by and all that. So there have been a couple of people trying to get into this space. And maybe if they see that Golf Reserve, you know, has gained some traction, maybe
sure,
that will
surely
inspire them to wipe off the old business model, the plans, and maybe, you know, go out and try it themselves too. Because
yeah.
I one personal classmate of mine wanted to get into the space. And this was like 8 years ago. Just very tough to do. And looks like Pratip has managed to put himself above the rest. And let's see how his regional expansion goes. Like, good for him.
So
Malaysian entrepreneur giving himself a chance to be successful at a regional level now.
Right. So make sure you also read the other articles in Digital News Asia, what we talked about. Watch the video.
Yeah.
Watch the video. We're moving into video as well.
So thanks to Jin. Jin's the man.
So Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia, I think he'll be back in 2 weeks' time. You know, don't hold your breath. This is Tech
Talk. We will be back.
This is Tech Talk with a very appropriate song from the Beatles. Hello, goodbye. BFM 89.9.
Chakaday.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.